Please stand or take whatever posture works best for you for the reading of God's word. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became a dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice. "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with him anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. And thank you, Kari, for that reading. Okay, well, let us turn to our time of proclamation, our sermon time each morning after our gospel reading. So I'm going to stop the screen share here. And sort out Zoom. Okay, there we go. So our reflection for Transfiguration Sunday, I'd like to begin with this. He was transfigured before them, and Elijah and Moses were talking with Jesus. I've often heard those words and imagine this scene with three people sort of huddled up having a convo together. I've even speculated as I hear this passage about what it was they were discussing, Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, as they stood there. You parted the water? Oh yeah? Well, I walked on it. Or you think this is bright? Try riding in a chariot of fire up to heaven. Whatever it was, the point being, I have this image of three chaps chatting away with one another on that mountain. However, the way Mark words it got me to wondering this week, what if there's another way to hear this story? In fact, I was curious about something and decided to take a look at the Greek. Now, let me be the first to say, if anyone ever, including me, tells you, "I looked at the Greek and here's what the Bible really means," you have my permission to stop listening, because that's nonsense. Words are malleable and translation is tricky, so we never know for sure. However, with that disclaimer in place, I did in fact discover something interesting there this week. In the phrase I quoted a moment ago, "He was transfigured before them and Elijah and Moses were talking with Jesus," that word "with," as it turns out, isn't actually in the Greek. In fact, there's no preposition at all. It simply says, "Elijah and Moses were talking. Jesus." Now, that's actually not all that strange. Greek does this quite often, leaves the preposition implied. But when it does so, we have some flexibility on how to translate it. And so I got to wondering, when Mark tells us Elijah and Moses were talking with Jesus, what if he didn't mean they were huddled up conversing about water crossings and chariots, but rather Elijah and Moses were talking in or through or along with Jesus? That is, what if the point was to suggest that when Jesus spoke in words and actions, Moses was present, speaking along with him? For this was what the law of God was always about. And when Jesus spoke in words and actions, Elijah was present, speaking along with him. For this was what the prophetic statements of God were always about, such that transfiguration is not merely some supernatural event, but a moment when a human being shines with the very way, Moses, and word, Elijah, of God. What if the transfiguration are times when a disfigured world is transfigured into something dazzlingly bright by human words and action, so that God might declare from the heavens, "Now that is what I'm talking about. This is my beloved. Listen to him." Which, if this is the case, suggests to me that transfiguration is not actually about Jesus removing some cloak to reveal a sort of superhuman strobe light underneath, but rather transfiguration is about embodying God's transformative light in this world, such that Jesus' own transfiguration becomes a prototype of sorts for all disciples called like him to let our light shine. Transfiguration in this reading is discipleship. Now, that's an introduction and that's a lot of theology. But what might all this mean in practical terms? What does this way of transfiguration actually look like in a human life? Well, to answer that, as a sort of complement to that theology I just rehearsed, I'd like to share with you a story, one that I hope will give us at least a glimpse of the dazzling light of a transfiguring life. The story goes like this. On October 6th, 1917, a baby girl was born to Luella and James Lee Townsend, their 20th child. Can you even imagine? Born in Montgomery County, Mississippi. For 45 years, this daughter worked with her family as a sharecropper picking cotton. During that four-decade stretch, she received just 6 years of public education. Fannie Lou Townsend Hamer was, as one commentator puts it, a most unlikely national hero. In 1962, just before her 45th birthday, while she and her family were barely surviving and news of the emerging civil rights movement hadn't yet reached the plantation where they lived, Fannie Lou Hamer heard the most remarkable thing in a Sunday sermon. She was told she had the right to register and vote. She was so stunned by this statement that after church, when some organizers from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference asked for volunteers to go down to the courthouse, despite the resistance they would inevitably face from white folks in Mississippi, she surprised herself and everyone around her by raising her hand. "I guess if I'd had any sense, I'd have been a little scared," she later recalled. But what was the point of being scared? The only thing they could do was kill me. And it kind of seemed like they'd been trying to do that a little bit at a time since I could remember. And so Fannie Lou Hamer went the very next day. And not one thing went right for her that Monday in Mississippi. She was, in the following order, harassed by police, fired from her job, kicked out of her sharecropper's house, and separated from her family, all because she had the temerity to attempt to register to vote, a right, incidentally, that she was denied because she could not, as the registrar demanded, explain de facto laws. "I knowed as much about a facto law," she stated, "as a horse knows about Christmas." And yet, homeless and now jobless, she returned 30 days later. and failed the test again, only to look the registrar directly in the eye and declare, "You'll see me every 30 days till I pass." And Fannie Lou Hamer proved true to her word. Perhaps unsurprisingly, those activists who encouraged her to vote in the first place saw something of a light in Fannie Lou, or rather, a fire, like the one from Elijah's chariot, and invited her to join both the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, where she quickly became a favorite teacher, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, where she worked tirelessly, encouraging and assisting her fellow Blacks in poor rural communities to register to vote. Now, we obviously don't have time for her entire story, so I'm not going to focus on the horrors this woman endured. They are both shocking and achingly familiar to Black women in the South in the 60s, reminding us just how disfigured this world can sometimes be. So I won't dwell on the doctor who gave her a hysterectomy without permission or prior notice. I won't spend time on the police officers who put her in jail, sexually harassed her, instructed her cellmates to beat her, all because she asked to pass them on the road without hassle. We won't spend time on Lyndon Johnson's derogatory reference to her as that illiterate woman. We won't discuss the six times she was shot at or the hospital that refused to treat her adopted daughter, who subsequently died of internal hemorrhaging because they didn't care for Fannie Lou Hamer's activism. No, we won't deny those moments. We won't pretend they didn't happen. But as Fannie Lou said, neither will we allow them to be her only story. We will not allow that script to be the only narrative that defines this woman's extraordinary life. Rather, we will recall this, that she and her husband raised two abandoned children as their own. "We had a little money," she remembers, "so we took care of them and raised them and loved them." We will recall that Fannie Lou Hamer went on to co-found the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party to prevent the regional all-white government from stifling the voices of Black men and women. And we will recall her speech at the 1964 Democratic National Convention, detailing the brutality she had experienced in her attempts to vote. A speech so inspiring and riveting, President Johnson called an impromptu press conference to halt network coverage of her. And we will recall that later that same night, every major network rebroadcast her testimony to the nation nonetheless, to a nation that heard her declare, "I question America. Is this America, the land of the free, where we have to sleep with our telephones off the hooks because our lives are threatened daily for wanting to live as decent human beings? I question America." And we this morning will recall that in 1968, her Freedom Democratic Party was granted a seat on the national stage, and Hamer was elected as a national party delegate. We will recall the time she started a small pig bank, providing families with stock they could raise and use for food and financial gain, not to mention ownership over their own livelihood. We will recall the 35 homes she helped secure for struggling Black families through her work with the Federal Housing Administration. And despite Johnson's derogatory comments about her literacy, we will recall that Shaw University, among others, granted her an honorary doctorate. That woman who had 6 years of public education, recognizing her intelligence and reminding academia what wisdom is all about. This morning, we will recall that Fannie Lou Hamer was one of the most gifted orators our nation has known, inspiring multitudes over the years in speeches spoken, always entirely without notes, including that December 1964 speech in Harlem when she proclaimed Christ was a revolutionary person out there where it was happening, striving for justice. That's what God is all about. We are not fighting against these people because we hate them. We are fighting these people because we love them. And we're the only thing that can save them now. A speech so rousing, the crowd, nearly half of it white, rose in spontaneous ovation at its close. And we will recall this. When a group of Black men and women seeking their right to vote were accosted by authorities, when chaos, confusion, and conflict erupted, we will recall the unforgettable moment when Fannie Lou Hamer stood in that crowd, stood up to those in power, and began to sing. Sing the words of that old spiritual, "This Little Light of Mine," silencing everyone who then joined in and sang along, reaffirming their purpose, stunning the authorities, and inspiring the march on to the courthouse. You see, the point of all that is this. In the midst of a disfigured world, Fannie Lou Hamer practiced transfiguration. When she sang, when she spoke, when she marched, when she organized, when she raised abandoned children, when she stood up to the powers and spoke truth, whether she created a political party or a pig farm, when she secured housing for those without, these moments shined with a dazzling light. And Moses was present there, for God's law was lived and preached. Serve the poor, liberate the oppressed. Elijah was present, calling out wickedness and calling forth righteousness. And God spoke from the heavens, declaring, "Now this is what I'm talking about. Here is my beloved. Listen to her." Like Jesus before her, Hamer's life transfigured this often disfigured world. By letting her light shine with God's holy way and word. Such was Jesus' calling, and such is ours as well, as Fannie Lou Hamer so clearly understood. Transfiguration is discipleship. So let us give Hamer the final word this Transfiguration Sunday, as this beloved disciple of Christ sings for us her inimitable rendition of "This Little Light of Mine."